Good morning. Our teaching this morning is based on Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Here ends the reading. Well, if you're just visiting with us this morning, we're midway through, or kind of winding down, a sermon series called Modern Family. And it's built around two chapters in the book of Ephesians, where Paul explains how faith and family life cohere, how they relate with one another, and how faith ultimately informs the way that we kind of order our lives as a family. We spent the first 2 weeks, we looked at Paul. He gives this really long description of marriage, and we saw it gave us the purpose of marriage and some kind of practical ways to make marriage work. And then last week, we talked about parenting and how parents can raise their kids in peace. And this morning, we're going to kind of flip that around a little bit, and we're going to talk about kids and their relationship with their parents. And hopefully, it's going to be something that everyone can relate to, because we're not going to spend most of the time on kids, but our children, adult and, you know, young and old, basically, how they relate to their parents. And I think, you know, when I first started looking at this idea, honoring your mother and father, I kind of was like, that's a boring subject, you know, a little bit. But I learned a lot as I studied and prepared for this talk. And I think what shocked me, two things shocked me as I thought about it. First, there's a lot in the Bible about it, especially the Old Testament. The Old Testament talks a lot about children's obligations to their parents. It's something, I think, that God, I mean, just based on how much it's in the Word of God, I think it's something God really cares about. And then second, you know, our culture has invested in the idea that parents influence their kids in ways that are, I mean, literally unparalleled. I mean, just think about, you know, I have dad issues or I have mom issues. We've really, and I think it's true, but we've bought in this idea that the way parents treat their kids, especially early on, kids live out of those dynamics for the rest of their lives. Parents' influence is huge and persistent. We invest millions of dollars in that idea every year. So all that goes to say is I think this is a really important subject. And so with that, let's jump right in. I'm sorry. If you could, I don't normally do this, but we're going to spend a lot of time in that Ephesians passage and look at a few different words. So if you have that service outline, it might be helpful. And there's a brief outline of the talk in the notes section on the back page. If it's helpful, if not, no worries. But I'm going to be referring to the passage a lot. So, well, first, I think I want you guys to see what Paul is really doing here, the kind of argument he's making. And what he's doing is he's making a really particular application out of a general principle. He's making a specific application out of a general principle. You guys know the Ten Commandments, right? Oh, no, I couldn't recite them, but I know of them. Well, the fifth commandment's a big one, honor your father and mother. And so what Paul is doing is he's grounding his appeal for kids to obey their parents within that general command. You know, Ephesians, his letter, was written to a Christian community in Ephesus that was comprised of families, you know, kids and adults. And what would have happened is Paul wrote it, he was in prison, someone delivered the letter, and then the whole congregation came together, whole households came together, and it would be read publicly. And so Paul, he's really talking to kids here, and he's saying, kids, based on the command to honor your father and mother that was originally designed for adult children, you need to obey your parents. Does that make sense? He's making a specific application. What we're going to do is look more at the general command to honor your father and mother. We're not going to talk so much about why young kids should obey their parents, but how do we, all of us who have parents, or all of us who have parents maybe that are deceased, how do we honor them, whether in action or in memory? And we're going to look at this subject, this idea, under three kind of main headings. What does this command require of us? What is it to honor our parents? Why are we supposed to do it? You know, why is it important? What reasons do we have to do it? And then finally, how do we do it? How does this command become something that we actually practice and build our lives around? What is it? Why are we supposed to do it? And how do we do it? Well, to start asking, what is it? What does it mean to honor our parents? I think it's actually really helpful to separate honor, you know, from the other related attitudes and actions that we often have towards our parents. So God doesn't ask us, for example, to love our parents. He doesn't command us to trust our parents or to respect our parents. And though Paul obviously insists that children, young kids, should obey their parents, there's no commandment categorically, children obey your mother and father. It's children honor your mother and father. There's something about honor that's specific, not those other things. And I think the reason why honor is important in particular, I think there's two reasons for that. First, your relationship with your parents changes a lot over a lifetime, right? And so think about how that would change the way that we think of obedience, for example. You know, should a two-year-old obey their parents? Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty clear, you know. Should a 16-year-old obey their parents? Maybe. I mean, there's some parents of 16-year-olds that should not be obeyed, you know. I mean, and I'm not saying anyone here, but you get my point. Should a 40-year-old just automatically obey their parents? No, that'd be weird, you know. That'd be unhealthy psychologically. So our relationship with our parents changes a lot. And then second, and this is more common sense, there's a lot of bad parents out there, a lot of destructive parents. And though I think, and I'm going to explain why, I think every parent should be honored in some sense, not every parent should be trusted or obeyed or respected. And wouldn't make sense for God to command us to treat our parents in a way that their behavior simply doesn't warrant. Honor. There's something about honor that God wants from us. Here's how one author describes it. Whatever else we may feel about our parents, however rich our gratitude or bitter our resentment, we are called to respect those who were given to be our prime teachers and guides. Honor is the unsentimental moral nucleus within the complex relationships between any child and their parent. It's a great phrase. Honor is the unsentimental moral nucleus. So it's unsentimental. It doesn't necessarily involve our feelings, like we think of love or respect or trust. And it's the moral nucleus. It's like the core that every other type of relationship with our parents is based on. So to honor someone is to make a moral decision to treat them with dignity and respect. If you're going to honor someone, you're making a commitment to provide for their best interest and to treat them with courtesy and dignity. Doesn't mean that you particularly like them even, or that you trust them, or that you confide in them. I hope you all love, trust, and confide in your parents. But you don't need to do that even to honor them. You're just making a commitment to treat them with dignity, courtesy, and respect. That's what honor is. It's a commitment. Well, why should we do it? And why does it matter? Well, I think Paul gives two reasons in that little brief passage from Ephesians. The first is a little bit more pragmatic or practical. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy a long life on the earth. You know, the original Ten Commandments, like way back in the day, they were given to the people of Israel, like the nation, right before they were about to go into the land that God had given them. given them. And part of what the commandments were about was a way for God to give them a kind of a code that would help them thrive and flourish as a people. And I think that the promise of the command, you know, this is the first command with a promise. I think the promise for us isn't necessarily that if we honor our parents, we're going to live long, like you'll avoid dying or something, you know, but it's more, it has a more of a communal sense to it, a communal fulfillment. If we as a people, you know, if we as a city or as a state or as a nation, if we provide for our parents' best interests, if we treat them with dignity and courtesy and respect as they age, I think that will just improve our overall health as a society, as a culture. And, you know, that sounds like, well, duh, but it's worth saying because, you know, we live in an aging society, just quantitatively, you know, and healthcare, and this is a good thing, enables us to live longer and longer and longer. And so a lot of, especially, you know, people my age, like a lot of our adult lives are going to be comprised of caring for our parents. And I know for a lot of you, that's like not theory, that's reality. And so it is important to remember that there are just social benefits to commit to making a commitment to provide for our parents' best interests long term. All right, hit that hard enough, I think. I think the ultimate reason, though, to honor our parents, the better reason is that phrase Paul mentions, for this is right. He says, for this is right. Now, that may not seem like it, but that's a pretty loaded statement. There's a lot going on behind those words. And to kind of unlock their significance, if you will, we need to think a little bit, and it's going to be a little bit tricky, but just stay with me. We need to think about the way God has kind of authored or created rules or laws or structures of morality that are true for all people, whether or not they're people of faith. Does that make sense? There's just certain things that are wrong and certain things that are right. Of course we believe that, right? I mean, murder is wrong. You don't have to be a Christian to think that. You know, God has woven certain kinds of moral structures or a moral order into the universe. And he created us to be in sync, right? To abide by that order. And obviously sin corrupts us and it estranges us from God and gets us out of rhythm. But when we come under God's authority, you know, kind of like what Matt prayed, you know, when Jesus becomes the Lord of our life and we start to get back in rhythm, we experience, this is the important part, we experience the liberty or the freedom of God's authority. And that sounds kind of funny, right? Almost counterintuitive. We have more freedom by being under someone's authority. Like as a teenager, you just want to be out of authority, right? That's how you have freedom. Well, I think what I'm trying to say is that we have more freedom if we're under God's authority. And there's a lot of cool ways you can illustrate that, but I think my favorite is a sports analogy. And if any of you guys have been through the Alpha course, this is gonna be very familiar. It's in the talk, Why and How Should I Read the Bible? Nikki Gumbel, the pioneer of the Alpha course, he gives this example. He was at a soccer game. His 8-year-old son, a bunch of kids were there, and the ref didn't show up. So the kids kind of, I don't really know if he volunteered or the kids asked him. Anyway, he stepped in to be the ref because the kids wanted to play and they needed a ref, right? Well, this was problematic because Nikki, he didn't really know the rules of soccer, at least not well enough to referee. And so the game just descended into chaos really quickly. And here's how he describes it. It's kind of funny. Some shouted that the ball was in. Others said that it was out. I wasn't at all sure, so I let things run. Then the foul started. Some cried, foul. Others said, no foul. And I had no idea who was right. Then people began to get hurt. And by the time the ref arrived, there were 3 boys lying injured on the ground, and all the rest were shouting, mainly at me. But the moment he arrived, he blew his whistle, arranged the teams, told them where the boundaries were, and had them under complete control. Then the boys had the game of their lives. And you get the point, right? It sounds fun to have no rules and just to be like unbound. But without them, it's really hard to play the game well. And eventually, and pretty quickly, that kind of unfettered freedom becomes destructive. You know, three boys were lying on the ground. Pregnant analogy, you know? So it's so too for us. You know, God has worked these boundaries, these kind of moral structures. It's hard to find the right word, but you get my point. And when we live in them, we abide by them, we honor them, it goes well for us. It's just better. Now, here's thinking, what does parents have to do with this? Here's where parents come in. Parents, and this is I think it's a biblical idea. Parents are the first representation of God's moral order in the life of a child. Parents, they represent that order to a young child, and in a really important way, in a really unique way, they detail or they describe or delineate that order. You know, parents are a lot of things, but above all, or maybe the essence you could say, and this is what I think Paul says in verse 4, parents are teachers, are their guides to their kids. Parents teach kids what's valuable, what's wrong, and what's right. They teach them what to love, what to cherish, what to work for. Parents, this is what Paul says, they bring their kids up, they nourish them by instructing them, by disciplining them, by teaching them what's wrong and what's right. And what Paul is saying is that ultimately, it's God who is the teacher. You know, it's God's providential care that is reaching out to these kids, but it's parents who act on God's authority. Parents have a certain amount of God-given authority in the life of their kids, and they exercise that authority by teaching them, instructing them, nourishing them in the ways of God, giving them a platform on which to grow and become adults. You know, that's what parents do. And I know parents do a lot of other things, but this is just what Paul's saying here. And so, it's right to honor our parents because by doing that, we're honoring God. God is the one that's behind parents, and parents act on God's authority in the life of their kids. So for kids to honor parents, they're actually honoring God. And this is the counter side. When kids dishonor parents or when they curse their parents, in effect, they're cursing God. They're cursing the way God has chosen to order the universe. And it's a big deal, you know, in the Old Testament. It's a really big deal. So, what about parents who don't teach their kids very well? Or what about parents who raise their kids by a certain set of values and then kids, for perhaps compelling reasons, choose to not live by those values? How are you supposed to honor your parents in that kind of situation? Well, I want to share a story with you guys from This American Life. You guys know This American Life? It's like a public radio program, stuff white people like. No, I'm just kidding. It's really cool. It basically tells the story of ordinary people's lives, you know, but it does it in a really creative and compelling, interesting way. And one of the most famous stories is about, it's really funny, it's about this brother and sister who made up a babysitting job. They basically created this makeup imaginary family and told their parents they babysat for them all the time. And they did that because their parents were, their mom, their dad wasn't really in the picture, but their mom was really cold, really controlling, and really verbally and emotionally abusive. I mean, you're not going to hear this, but the things that she says to her daughter at a really young age are just horrific. I mean, they're honestly abusive. Anyway, in the interview you're going to hear, they're talking about, Ira Glass is the host, and he's asking her, her name's Carol, what her relationship is like now with her mom as her mom ages and how she's involved in her mom's life. And we can play.
How often do you see her now?
Do I see her?
Yeah.
I am now seeing her twice a week. I mean, I call her every night, which is it's all something to do with me because she doesn't know that I call her every night.
Because she's becoming senile.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you think you've gotten by being the one caring for her?
One time when I was 35, I lashed out at her in such a way and told her how I felt about her. And she sat in a chair in the kitchen and she was crying. And I'd never even seen her cry before. And when I finally stopped talking, she said, "I did the very best I could." And I thought, oh my God, she did. Her best was so bad. Her best was so empty. But she couldn't do any better. I decided, and it helps me a lot. I have.
I love that. I love that she kind of stuck with it, with her mom, and then one day just kind of let it out in probably a healthy way. But then her mom reacted and said, "You know I didn't do a great job, but it was the best that I could." And realizing that her mom tried. You know, her mom probably, I don't know, but I'm assuming her mom had her own issues that really impaired her ability to be a parent. And she's still culpable, but she still did wrong things, but her mom was damaged goods too. And by realizing that her mom at least tried, she did her best, that enabled her, it didn't take away all the bad things she did, but it enabled her to honor her, enabled her to see the good in what she at least tried to do. And I think there's a lesson in that for us. You know, when our parents, even if they weren't the best, even if they taught us things that we now think, oh man, that was bad. You know, we can honor the fact that they picked up and discharged that God-given office that a parent has. And even if we don't personally live under their values now, we can at least honor the fact that they stood in and represented in some faint way God's authority. You know, because regardless of our experience with our parents, parents have a significance that even transcends one family, you know? And so we honor them, and then by extension of that, we honor God. Okay, final section. How do we honor our parents? Now, how do we do it? And for the sake of time, you know, I think it's pretty easy to figure out on one level. You have to honor your parents by doing what actually honors them, you know? Like, it's not that complicated. Find ways that are culturally appropriate, and you do what blesses them, right? If it's quality time, if it's birthday cards, if it's whatever it is, you know? I think one way, just to be kind of practical, especially this is true for people more around my age, you know, very mature and, no kidding, people in their late 20s, is to honor the fact that your parents want to see themselves in you. You know, your parents want to see themselves in you, and so you can honor your parents by drawing attention to what the good that you've taken from them. And even if you live very differently than your parents want you to, and maybe it's like, I became a Christian and my parents didn't want me to, you know? That's good that you're disobeying your parents in that sense, but you can still draw attention to the fact that, you know, I mean, for example, what if, this isn't true for me, but what if you're really good with your money and that was a value that your dad had that kind of, that was instilled in you? You know, it's honoring of your parents to say, you know, Dad, I really learned that from you. Thank you. I'm carrying that on, as it were. You know, that's really important. But that's a little more practical. I think something that's a little bit more fundamental, something that's more heart-centered, how do you really honor your parents? Well, the best way to really honor your parents is to become or be renewed in the knowledge that we are sons and daughters of our true and heavenly parent, God. If you really want to honor your parents, you really have to deepen your identity as a child of God. You know, in a perfect world, psychologists have this word called salient. And a salient parent, salient father, is a father who's able to combine benevolence and strength. A father that's able to nurture their child and also empower them. And a really good parent, you know, even though they're imperfect, they open up a window for their child to see God. Because that's what God's like, you know. God's very tender with us, but God is also strong. and he leads us into maturity and strength. So in a perfect world, parents can image God and help their kids see God. But, of course, we don't live in a perfect world, and oftentimes parents aren't able to nurture like they should. Or they have this God-given authority that I described earlier, but they abuse that authority, whether it's verbally or emotionally or physically. And the result of that, you know, just bad parents, is that it ruptures whatever innate bond we have with our parents. And so we walk through our lives, you know, with these wounds, with real wounds where our parents were supposed to fill in certain things in our lives, and there's just gaps. It's like we're torn. And the result of that is that we're angry at our parents. We have deep, deep unforgiveness. And we certainly can't honor them with any amount of integrity because we're just still so divided, so ambivalent, or maybe not ambivalent, so angry at who our parents are. So what do we do? Where do we go? Well, guys, there was another tear, another split in the parent-child, in a parent-child relationship. And it's the hope and the source of our healing. And when Jesus was dying on the cross and he was deserted by his closest friends, his last consolation, his last hope was that his Father, his heavenly Father, would bring him comfort and peace. But the sin that Jesus took upon himself, our sin, it veiled the face of the Father. Father was cut off. And the Father, sounds funny to say it, but the Father released his Son into that darkness. You know, the relationship between the Father and the Son was split. And Jesus, you know, remember Jesus said, "Father, Father, why have you forsaken me?" That was real. I mean, that was a son forsaken by his father. And that was a father who willingly forsook his son. It sounds theologically weird, but you get my point. Well, why? Well, Jesus and the Father were separated so that we, in Jesus, could be united to the Father. And if that's your story, if you were forsaken emotionally, physically, verbally, by your father or mother, there's a place, a special place in God's heart for you. And that pain, that just deep vacuum or tear, you can bring that to God. And in a really unique way, I think the power of the resurrection fills in those gaps. It really does. You know, we can't repair the wounds of the past. We can't go back in time and redo all the bad things our parents did, our failures or whatever. But we can become secure and confident in a much greater love. And when we're secure in that, when that's our reality, it helps us see the best in what our parents did, even if it was empty or bad. You know, in another one of his letters, Paul, he said this: God sent his son to redeem those enslaved by the law so that we would receive his adoption. And because we are his children, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts. And it cries, "Abba, Father." You're no longer a slave, he says, but a child of God. So I want to leave you guys with a question. Do you have the spirit of sonship in your heart? You know, do you really think of yourself and feel yourself to be a child of God with all of the privileges and all of the assurance of care that that title entails? I'll leave you with a question. I'll ask you and just beg you, become a son, a daughter, a child of God. That's how you honor your parents. That's how you reconcile yourself to where your parents were imperfect. And that's the wellspring or the force that will really enable you to honor them while they're living and in memory. Let's pray.